And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. I have asked my buddy Pat McShay if he would like to come back on, and he has said affirmative. Pat, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thanks, Jerry. It's great to be back.
You know, I was reading an article from the UNS report. Ron UNS wrote it. It's UNS, UNZ.com. Great website for good information. And he had an article on 9/11. And seeing as how the 25th anniversary is this Friday and the 1 year anniversary of the assassination of Charlie Kirk is this Thursday, I thought Pat and I would have a discussion today. And I want to call this one 9/11, Charlie Kirk, JFK, RFK, and Epstein. Is there a connection? And as Pat and I dive into this, you will be hard-pressed to convince either one of us that there is not a connection with all of these events that have transpired in this country. Am I right, Pat?
Yes, you're right there.
Let's start with the one-year anniversary of Charlie Kirk. We know that his Jewish backers were pressuring him, and he was fed up with all of the atrocities that they're committing in Gaza, the West Bank. So he was going to expose, and he had Tucker Carlson at one of his TPUSA rallies and told him, go all the way. Tucker didn't hold back, did he?
No, he didn't. And Tucker has woken up on what really happened on 9/11. And I also wrote an extensive article last year titled 9/11, All Roads Lead to Israel. And if you read the article, there's no mistaking who planned and executed 9/11. And it didn't have anything to do with Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda. It was clearly planned by Israelis and neocons in the American government, like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, who wrote the plan to invade 7 countries for the purposes of regime change. And the plan was written several years before 9/11. And all of those guys that wrote the plan ended up in George Bush's administration. So,
yeah, George the Dumber.
George Bush the Dumber is what I like to call it now. And all those people, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Richard Perle, Scooter Libby, all these names that were from the Bush administration, they wrote the plan to invade Iraq, Iran, Libya, Syria, Somalia, all these different countries. And Iran, who were now bombing back to the Stone Age, they were the last country on the list of 7 that we hadn't taken out and changed regimes. So that's what they're in the process of doing. This had nothing to do with stopping a nuclear program. They were not pursuing nuclear weapons. There had been a fatwa that the former Supreme Leader put out there that they never intended to make a bomb. And we're pushing them into it right now.
Yes, we are. And it's funny that 9/11 pretty much got covered up. You know, the same thing happened to the Murrah building. They raised both buildings. They gathered up all of the evidence. There really was no investigation, and this kind of ties in with JFK and RFK. No investigation. It's hurry up, let's get rid of the evidence, and let's forget this nasty incident, and let's just kind of whitewash it.
Well, yeah, they said that they never found the black boxes on 9/11, but a fireman wrote a book and said that he couldn't get it published, but he said that he was with a group of firemen that found the black boxes from the two planes that hit the Twin Towers. And someone took them, confiscated them, and they've never turned up since. But he said that they definitely found them. The government's position was that they never were found.
That's funny, because they were able to find a wallet of one of the alleged hijackers in perfect condition. How is the black box destroyed?
Yeah. It's built to withstand being destroyed. So it's kind of a joke. The American people were never shown a shred of evidence that Muslim terrorists planned 9/11. And the FBI admitted later that they had no proof that Osama bin Laden had anything to do with 9/11. And later, seven of the alleged 9/11 hijackers were found to be alive after 9/11. So the rest of them were probably fictional cutouts that will never surface again, because no one's going to know anything about them, and no one even remembers their names. Muhammad Atta's father said that he spoke with Muhammad Atta after 9/11. So, you know, the truth is 9/11 was another Israeli false flag attack and PSYOP, just like the attack on the U.S. Liberty and the Lebanon affair, when a group of Egyptian Jews were recruited by Israeli military intelligence to plant bombs inside the Egyptian and American and British-owned civilian targets. And then the attack on the Liberty has been proven to be an Israeli attack and not a mistake like the Israelis want us to believe.
There is the kicker, isn't it? So Charlie Kirk was assassinated 1 year ago Thursday, the 10th of September. They have their patsy, just like JFK, RFK, and he's on trial, and the judges rule that he can be held to the death penalty, kind of like they did Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
You know, the tie-in, Pat, I mean, who has the most advanced logistics setup to pull off an assassination of a public figure and get away with it? And I talked with Chuck Baldwin about this. It's none other than the Mossad. So.
Yeah. Well, the Israelis brag about their assassination. And so, yeah, it's not a stretch to believe that they would have done all of it.
Well, they had perfection. I mean, they have perfected the art of assassination of public and political figures. They did it in 1963 in Dealey Plaza, and they put their patsy Lee Harvey Oswald on trial, and then Jacob Rubenstein whacked him right there in police custody.
Right.
And then Ruby was going to spill the beans because he was tired of being incarcerated for the murder, And miraculously, Ruby got cancer and died in prison.
Right.
Hmm. So, it, you know, got to cover all your bases, get rid of the weak points.
Well, the only reporter that did an interview with Jack Ruby was a New York reporter. Oh, what was her name? I wrote about her. She was murdered later. They said that she died of an overdose, but and a drug overdose and alcohol, but she didn't have a drinking problem and she didn't have a prescription for any of the drugs that they said killed her.
You know, it's convenient how they tie up these loose ends. So they eliminate the Patsy Lee Harvey. They eliminate the whistleblower in Ruby. They eliminate the reporter that was going to expose what Ruby had said and implicate Israel. They're taken out. McVeigh, who knows why they blew up the Murrah building? It was some false flag event to stir up some kind of anti-militia movement. But
they wanted to blame him in the militia movement. Yeah.
Yeah, they killed him. So they killed anybody that could expose what was going on as far as Charlie Kirk's assassination. They got their Patsy, and you can bet your bottom dollar that that young man's going to be found guilty and they're going to execute him. Dead men tell no tales, right, Pat?
Yeah, that's right. That is absolutely right. You know, you had the Robert Kennedy assassination. He was shot in the back of the head, and Sirhan never was behind him. He was in front of him. So that should have been the first clue that Sirhan was a patsy there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't see any pictures of him behind. I've seen pictures of him in front where they, I guess, tried to doctor it and make it look like he was guilty of killing Bobby. But it's funny how they hide so much of the details. You know, there's an interview you mentioned that Tucker had played on his show, where Donald Trump was interviewed the day of 9/11, and they said the towers came down. He said, there's no way. Did the planes fly through them with all that steel? How?
Yeah, Trump was on a morning show after the towers, or after the planes had so-called flew into the buildings there. And he said, how in the world could these planes fly through those steel enmeshed walls? He said, there's just no way. Those giant steel girders were placed every 3 feet along that entire wall. And there's just no way an aluminum plane, I don't care how fast it was going, it would not go through those giant steel girders.
How could a plane possibly go through the steel? I happen to think that they had not only a plane, but they had bombs that exploded almost simultaneously, because I just can't imagine anything being able to go through that wall. Most buildings are built with the steel is on the inside around the elevator shaft. This one was built from the outside, which is the strongest structure you can have.
People don't understand, unless they've been up to that type of elevation, the amount of sway that these skyscrapers have. Because of the winds, the jet stream, they are built, and Trump should know this if he's in construction, but they are built to withstand ungodly amounts of flexing or rocking back and forth, if you will, because of the wind currents at the top of these buildings.
Trump even explained how the towers on 9/11, how the exterior walls of that building were the strongest part of the whole building. And he talked about the steel and concrete exterior, and there's just no way an aluminum plane, especially the wings and the tail section. You know, the tail section on one of those 767s is 45 feet tall. So it's 4.5 stories tall. That would have sheared right off. There's no way that would have entered the building. So how in the world did it? The newspaper columnist I was trying to think of was Dorothy Kilgallen. She was the most famous female reporter in America in 1963. Her column was syndicated in over 200 newspapers, and Ernest Hemingway, who was a good friend of hers, called her the greatest female writer in the world. And she was given an interview with Jack Ruby and spent a lot of time with him, really the only reporter that was given any kind of time interviewing him. And she was overdosed, I believe, murdered. Mark Shaw wrote a book called The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, making a compelling argument that Kilgallen was murdered or suicided by the mobster Carlos Marcello, who feared her 18-month investigation would expose him. Clay Shaw, who was also featured in the movie JFK, he was a CIA operative and a private investigator who also had an office in Carlos Marcello's offices there in New Orleans. So there's little doubt that foul play was involved in killing Dorothy Kilgallen, because they did not want her to spill the beans on what Jack Ruby told her.
Right. Eliminate all of the dead ends, all the weak ends, dead men tell no tales. It still comes back to that. And then you compare that with the death squads, the assassin squads that the Mossad has and has bragged about. It's a pretty damning story when you put the puzzle pieces together. 9/11, do you remember where you were when the planes were on national TV? They were watching, we were all watching, it seemed like, the TV. You remember where you were?
Oh, yeah. I was still at home watching it on TV, and I remember calling my brother and saying to my brother at that time, how are these aluminum planes flying through these walls with these giant steel girders and supports? And my brother was an iron worker. And he said, yeah. He goes, I don't buy it. I mean, we didn't buy it from day one.
Huh. That's awesome. I had no idea your brother was an iron worker. We were at the ministry. We were at the office. Tex and Wanda had not come into the office yet. And somebody called and told us to turn the TV on. So we had a little TV in the back. And we all moseyed back there while the phones were quiet and turned it on and just sat there flabbergasted, Pat, that something like this could happen. And, you know, Tex being so far ahead of anybody, I'm sure when he watched it, he had an inkling of what was going on, but I just could not imagine somebody doing an act of terror on our soil. As the years have gone by, and I have done my own research, and I have turned to a lot of people that knew more than me and have dug into the walls of truth to see what actually was going on, you're going to be hard-pressed to convince me that this was not an implosion, because as the buildings came down, you know, and Leslie and I were talking about this last night, there is no way these great big skyscrapers are going to just implode upon themselves unless the girders are cut. There's no way. It's built to withstand so much stress from the wind that a jet fuel is not going to burn steel girders. I'm sorry. It's just not going to be prolonged enough to do this.
Well, not only that, but these fires were already dying not long. You know, the fuel burned up quick, and the fires were dying. That's what all the black smoke was. You know, these were oxygen-deprived fires, and so these are not fires that are going to melt the steel supports like we were told. I mean, everyone who's used a gas stove knows that when you turn your stove on, your burners on, there's a reason they don't melt the steel there on top, because that fire is not hot enough to melt steel. And those fires were not hot enough to melt anything. And so this notion that they were weakened and that's how they pancaked, it's all nonsense. And when you watch the buildings come down, you can see the explosive squibs right below where it's blowing up. You can see the explosive squibs blowing out of the side of the building. I also write in my article, William Rodriguez, who was called the last man out of the tower, he saved a lot of lives that day. He was a 20-year maintenance man in the Twin Towers, and he was in the sub-basement area when he was rocked to the floor by an explosion in the basement level, and that was before the plane hit. So explosions were going off in the basement before the plane hit. That's what the people weren't told that. Building 7, explosions were going off in Building 7 that morning, and although no plane hit Building 7, it later came down about 5:20 that afternoon because it was loaded with explosions. It was planned. It was a planned demolition, and people need to wake up. These buildings were wired with explosives long before 9/11. And how did they get access? Well, they had the largest elevator renovation project going on, the largest in the world at both trade towers before 9/11. So what could they have been doing there in the inner core of the Twin Towers? They could have been placing those explosives inside of the elevator shaft. There obviously were already bombs placed in the basement levels. Not only that, but they knew that these Israeli art students were renting out upper floors, that they were probably likely planting bombs or explosives in those upper levels where the plane supposedly hit. You know, there are a lot of people that don't even believe that real planes hit or that passenger planes hit. They think it's either CGI or something, but they've got to explain how aluminum planes, especially the wings and the 45-foot tail section, could pass through the tiny hole that the plane supposedly made. They were probably made with explosives.
As anything is possible when you contemplate, when you have the gumption to look deeper than the garbage that controlled media, which is owned by the Jews, when they put that propaganda out there,
right,
that we didn't see, and it was years after the event, Pat, where I saw the explosions coming out of windows before that section started coming down, and it was clockwork. And if you've ever watched how they take down, like I've watched them take down an NFL stadium or an old baseball stadium, and you hear, you hear ka, 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 and then you see chunks of concrete spewing out of the sides, and then it falls straight down upon each other. That's exactly what the images show that were finally released later, but the public had already bought the fact that some dude hiding in a cave in Pakistan or Afghanistan or wherever they say he was pulled this off. Nobody talked about the fact that Osama bin Laden was a CIA asset until well after the fact.
Yeah, Tim Osman, OSS man. Yeah, that was the handle it was with the CIA. People will never wake up to Israel being behind it because our government just won't allow it. But if you read my article, maybe you could put a link to my article with this interview, because I go into all the reasons that Israel was behind it, and it's a mountain of evidence.
There was an outstanding book. We used to offer it called Stranger Than Fiction, written by Dr. Albert Pastore. And if anybody cares to get on and do a search for Stranger Than Fiction, they will find this book. And we also offer Victor Thorne's book, 9/11 Evil, and I'll tell you how to get a hold of that, a copy of that, at the halftime break. But those two books dovetail so well with the events. They have chronicled and detailed so much of what happened on 9/11 that you only come away with one answer, and the fact that it was a Mossad in cahoots with the CIA, or where I wonder where we've heard that before. We'll touch on that in the second half. But you find out who had just taken over the Twin Towers. His name was Larry Silverstein.
Yep.
And the buildings had been condemned because of asbestos. People were starting to get sick. They were having to mitigate all of the asbestos in these Twin Towers. It was going to cost Silverstein hundreds of millions of dollars to renovate and get rid of the asbestos. And instead, you know, let's think about this. Do I want to spend a couple $100 million on these Twin Towers and renovate it? Or could we create some kind of false flag and let's have George W. the Dumber Bush's Pearl Harbor moment, and we'll stir up all kinds of patriotic fervor, and we'll send all our young boys off to, well, the Jews say we will send their young boys off to Iraq, and we'll get rid of Osama, and we'll get rid of Sodom, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. It ties perfectly together. Goodness. The puzzle pieces are there. You just have to have the gumption to put them together. It's crazy how much data is out there, but we have become an apathetic society. We don't care to do a deep dive. What we see on TV is what we're programmed with, and we're going to buy that. And we're not going to do any investigations of our own. We're going to take everything that the government tells us because they're from the government. They're here to help us. And they're going to protect us. Man, we've got a whole lot more Pat and I are going to cover on the other side. We have to take a break. My guest today is Pat McShay. We are discussing 9/11, Charlie Kirk, JFK, RFK, and we haven't forgot Epstein. Is there a connection? We are going to prove that today. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. 9/11 Evil is the book the government, mainstream media, 9/11 Commission, Distractors, obfuscators, deceivers, and those who want to keep a lid on 9/11 don't want you to read. It is the most dangerous book ever written about one of the most heinous acts carried out against the American people. Of course, there will be those who try to conceal, cover up, and ignore this information. Even those who claim to be part of the 9/11 truth movement itself. Yes, this data was available in different locations. A little here, a little there. But it had not been called together all in one place so convincingly, and it hits harder than anything ever written on the subject of 9/11. This book doesn't play nice, and it's not lightweight in the least. Instead, this is hardcore, heavy-duty reality. We already know why 9/11 was done, and we already know how the World Trade Center towers were destroyed. But for some reason, most everyone wants to shy away from who ultimately did 9/11. Sure, there are those who never go beyond the Bush-Cheney cabal, or those who blame it on faceless, shadowy entities like the New World Order or the Illuminati. But these individuals all belong to a massive protection racket that will do anything humanly possible to keep the finger of blame from being pointed in a certain direction. The big question is, do you have the guts to confront the truth about 9/11, or will you opt to be an ostrich with its head in the sand, refusing to accept the fact that 9/11 was not only an inside job, but also an outside job, and the actual terrorists didn't reside in Afghani caves or belong to a non-existent Nazi cult? Once you have read this book, you will never view this event in the same way again. It's 122 pages. We're only asking $18. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That will make your total $24 for 9/11 Evil. You can order your copy by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. There's an ad for 9/11 Evil on the front page of powerofprophecy.com. Click on it. It will take you to our secure shopping cart. Fill in your name, address, charge card, shipping method, hit submit. We'll get it and get it coming to you. If you care to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R period O period Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Pat McShay. Pat, welcome back.
Hey, Jerry. It's great to be here.
Now, we mentioned Larry Silverstein at the end of the first half. Larry had, well, he used to eat breakfast on the penthouse suite, the top floor every morning, and mysteriously he had a dental appointment or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, he claimed he had a dental appointment. The same thing with Howard Lutnick, who was had a company that was on the, like, the 78th floor and 79th floor, right around there. He also didn't go to work that morning, claimed that he was taking his son to his first day of school, but it turned out that his son had started school the week before, so no one's ever gotten a straight answer from him. He's also in the Epstein files, but Trump keeps him around. Well, you know, what you had that day, Frank Lowy was also Larry Silverstein's partner. These guys are New York Jews, billionaires, all friends of Jeffrey Epstein, friends of Benjamin Netanyahu, Ronald Lauder, the CEO of Estee Lauder Cosmetics. He approved the sale of the Twin Towers to Epstein and Lowy for the state of New York. He was also a longtime head of the World Jewish Congress and was described as the man most responsible for Benjamin Netanyahu's rise to political prominence. Lauder, along with former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who was connected to British intelligence and was part of Les Wexner's mega group, Les Wexner and Ehud Barak, former Prime Minister of Israel, were both involved with Epstein, also both good friends of Netanyahu, and both involved in 9/11. Also associated with, you know, all the sex trafficking that's going on. Also involved was Louis Eisenberg, another rich Jewish billionaire and board member of the United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York, which is the largest fundraising body in America for Israel. And then you've got Silverstein, who was awarded $4.5 billion in insurance payout, despite only putting up $14 million of his own money to purchase the lease. And Frank Lowy, his partner, was once a member of the Israel's Golani Brigade and was a member of the Jewish underground terrorist group back in the 40s and 50s, the Haganah. The chairman of the Port Authority, Eisenberg, was another friend of Netanyahu's. Silverstein also owned Building 7, which would collapse later that day, even though no plane hit the building. And in the months leading up to the 9/11 attack, I mentioned the largest elevator modernization in the world took place at the Twin Towers. And this could have been how the perpetrators gained access to the tower's inner core and wired the towers to blow. So the official narrative that fires melted the thick steel support beams and caused the floors in this 110-story tower to pancake is just ridiculous.
You know, I also found an article that mentioned that over 3,000 Jews who were working in the Twin Towers received an email before a day or two before the event and told to stay home.
Yes, it came from a company called Odigo. That's a Israeli company.
So they did not get sacrificed, which is, Pat and I talked about this during the break, but it's strange to me. They have not been afraid to exercise the Hannibal Doctrine. We saw that on October 7. If you've studied the Holocaust or the alleged Holocaust, you know that they sacrificed all the Jews that were in Germany to further enhance their position to play the card to get a homeland for nothing but Jews. But they warned them the day before, I think it was, that you need to stay home tomorrow. There's going to be an event. You don't need to take part in it. But you mentioned Les Wexner. Didn't he have a condo or something that he rented out?
The biggest house in New York City, they said, was worth $70 million that Epstein lived in. He bought it from a trust, Les Wexner. Same thing with Howard Lutnick, who's a Trump advisor. He lived right next door to Epstein, and he bought his house or condo, whatever. He bought it from Les Wexner's trust as well. So I think that all these guys that were in the mega group, all these rich billionaire Jews in New York that were part of this mega group, I think all these guys were involved in the Twin Tower destruction. So they all had to be.
You know, it's too convenient that Silverstein was looking at a ton of financial loss with the abatement of the asbestos. All of his buddies in the mega group, it's almost as, and their support for Bibi Netanyahu to put him, elevate him to be the prime minister. It's not that far a stretch to think that this was all rehearsed and planned and to the nth degree planned.
Yeah, I've got quotes in my article where a number of prominent Jews talked about how the Twin Towers were going to get hit. Bibi Netanyahu, 10 years before 9/11 or 7 years before, he said that the United States will find out, you know, how bad this Islamic terror is when the trade towers are blown up. He said something like that. So Israel Hissel, who was the former head of the Mossad, said something similar. So I think they were planning this for a long time. And if you look at Larry Silverstein admitted on 9/11 that the 47-story Tower 7 was brought down with a controlled demolition. He said, I got a call from the fire department commander, and I told him because of the tremendous loss of life, the smartest thing would be to just pull it. And they made the decision to pull it. Well, pulling it is an industry term describing a demolition. And since it takes weeks to set explosives to wire a building that size, when was the building wired to implode? No one asked Larry Silverstein that? Silverstein also had a terrorism rider to his insurance policy that doubled his payout. That's more evidence of prior knowledge, or should be. But then the New York chief, Daniel Nigro, N-I-G-R-O, the commander on duty on 9/11 said, I'm well aware of Mr. Silverstein's statement, but to the best of my recollection, I did not speak to him on that day, and I don't recall anyone telling me that they did either. So did he just make it up? I think he did.
Wow. It's too convenient, the facts that Silverstein was missing, Lutnick was missing, all of these other mega group billionaire Jews were missing. The fact that the Jewish-owned company told their people to stay home. And then, well, there was, in the last 25 years, Pat, and I'm just saying because it's the 25th anniversary, but we've had two catastrophic events that affected a lot of people, and I'm not talking natural disasters. I'm talking events, false flag events that have happened. And we can just recently go back to COVID-19. That was planned out, and they had the work group at the Johns Hopkins thing with Bill Gates and a whole bunch of muckety mucks. But there was also,
don't forget the Rockefeller Foundation. They're involved in everything like this.
But there was also an event that was happening before 9/11 happened with NORAD, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. They were doing, NORAD conducted war games 2 years before 9/11, simulating terrorists hijacking a passenger jet and flying it into the Twin Towers. Now, this is 2 years before 9/11. In October of 2000, they did a simulation of a terrorist flying a hijacked plane into the Pentagon as well. So why on 9/11 were there no fighter jets nearby? How many Americans even know about the test that NORAD conducted? Because George Bush the Dumber, said after 9/11, we had no idea that they would use, the terrorists would use airplanes to fly into the Pentagon or the Twin Towers, even though our own military was conducting war games simulating those very acts. So, yeah, none of this was a surprise. It's just like Susan Lindauer you had on your show, former CIA operative who was working with Iraq and their weapons of mass destruction, and she said they knew there was no weapons of mass destruction. Everyone in the Bush administration knew it, and they were lying to the public. And she said also that her handler at the CIA briefed her on the 9/11 attack on the Twin Towers 4 months before it happened. 4 months before it happened. I think it might have even been May. I think it was May. So, yeah, that's 4 months. So, yeah, she knew about it, and she tried to get word to Andy Card, who's her cousin. I don't know if she mentioned that, but yeah, Andy Card, who was the guy that whispered into Bush's ear when he was reading to those kids in the schoolhouse down in Florida, she tried to get word to him, and no one would listen to her. And that tells you one thing. They knew this was going to happen, and they let it happen. What's that remind you of? That reminds me of the October 7th attack by Hamas in Israel. It's now proven that the Israelis and Bibi Netanyahu had prior knowledge of that attack, and they wanted it to happen because they were already planning for 2 years to put in Gaza on the Mediterranean. Jared Kushner and Donald Trump, they knew about it. So I don't understand how this was such a surprise, because they wanted that attack to happen because they had every intention of killing and moving every Palestinian out of Gaza, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Right. So do you remember when they set off the car bomb in the basement in the parking area of the Twin Towers?
The one that William Rodriguez was knocked down by?
No, this was before 9/11. The FBI, for, you know, their prowess, they tracked the serial number of the axle to the rent-a-car company, and they tracked down this alleged terrorist who had detonated this car bomb in a van to try to bring down the towers. I wonder if that wasn't just to start.
Oh, are you talking about the Egyptian officer that they arrested?
Yeah.
That whole thing was an FBI setup. Those guys had no intention of blowing up anything. They thought that it was a drill, and they did not know that the FBI had put in real explosives. That never would have happened without the FBI.
So you start thinking about that. What did that do? That made Americans aware of terrorists operating in America, and it started the ball rolling.
I believe the Israelis were behind the attack on the USS Cole as well, and that was blamed on Osama bin Laden too. So they were getting us ready for it with things like that, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, you start, things just start clicking, Pat, when you contemplate all of the events leading up to it. You and I both know that the car bomb in the parking garage was nothing. It was kind of like a test run to start priming Americans that the Muslims are bad, that, you know, we have terrorists that are going to come to this country. And it started us thinking, I think that probably pushed us after 9/11, because the Army recruitment of volunteers exploded after 9/11. young men willing to defend our country, all full of patriotic fervor, were beating a path to Army, Navy, Marines to go in because we have to go get these terrorists. And so that's there. But nobody questions how George the Dumber had the framework of the Patriot Act ready so quickly for Congress for them to take it and move it through the House and then the Senate, and then W signs it. We gave up so much of our liberties and our freedoms for so-called safety. And all of
You're right. It was written well before 9/11, and what it did was it took away American rights, which is, you know, what all these false flags are designed to do. They're all designed to take away our rights, and that's exactly what 9/11 did. And they could not wait to get that passed after 9/11. Same thing with the shoe bomber. He was handled by American and Israeli intelligence. They were not going to let him on the plane. The airline would not let him on the plane. And the intelligence operatives intervened and got him on the plane. And that's why we had to take our shoes off at the airport for 20 years. It was all a psyop.
Programming the sheeple, Pat, 100%. Yep. So all of these events lead up, but it's still, I take it all the way back to 1963 when you've got James Jesus Angleton and all of the cohorts at the CIA working hand in glove with the Mossad. Kennedy had told David Ben-Gurion, you will not have nuclear weapons. We will come take them. We will forbid it. We will cut off all of your support if you continue. And what happened?
Yeah, he had given him an ultimatum. One of the last time they spoke, he gave him an ultimatum and said, I'm not going to tell you again, you know. And he was killed shortly after that. A great book by Laurent Guyette, he's a French author, wrote a fantastic book about the Mossad being behind the Kennedy assassination. Matter of fact, there's a great article about that on Ooms.com as well. It's called The Mossad, the Kennedy Assassination, and Angleton, I think is the name of it. But Jesse Angleton. You know, he was a arch Zionist that was the head of the CIA's counterintelligence, and he was the top CIA guy that was directing the Kennedy assassination as well.
And then you had the Dulles boys.
And the Dulles boys. And don't forget the Dallas mayor was the second in command of the CIA's brother. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know Herbert Walker was in Dallas that weekend. They had that big shindig the night before Kennedy was getting whacked. And
yeah, I included a picture of that of him in one of my articles. They got a picture of him standing right outside of the book depository right after the Kennedy assassination. Looks just like him.
And LBJ was there?
A lot of people believe that George H.W. was there as a on-site supervisor of the Kennedy assassination.
I have heard that.
Howard Hunt was there.
Yep.
Hunt denied being there until his deathbed. He finally gave a deathbed confession to his son that he was there that day. I think everybody thought so anyway. But
so many people that were at that shindig were outed later, but that was after the cover-up had already happened. So we, you know, Michael Collins Piper did an outstanding book, Final Judgment, on all of his research, pointing it directly at the Mossad, but he didn't spare the CIA, Angleton, the Dulles boys. He didn't spare anybody. And I think in his book, he also talked about the shindig where all of these heavy hitters were at the night before the assassination.
Yeah.
And then you go to RFK. He had to be eliminated because he had said he was going after the mob, the mobsters, the Sicilian, the Italian, whatever you want to call it, the mobsters. They weren't the ones, they weren't the money behind all of the operations. No, it was Meyer Lansky and other rich Jews that used their money to support and prop up these Sicilian gangsters.
Right.
And Kennedy was going to go after the Jews. He knew who killed his brother. So Bobby has to be eliminated.
Yeah.
And all of these puzzle pieces fit, Pat. It's just, it's uncanny when you have just a few clues and you have some direction and it sends you down the rabbit hole that you and I both travel every day to come up with these conclusions. It's just uncanny how many of these events that have occurred in this country to the detriment of Americans and the benefit of the Zionists, it's unbelievable, and it's too hard to shoot down, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah, you look at the Israelis, the dancing Israelis who were filming the Twin Towers from across the river. And they have video of the plane hitting the first tower, which means that they had prior knowledge. I think that's a given that the Mossad, they ended up admitting, because they were let go and allowed to fly back to Israel, even though they were suspects in the towers coming down. They were Israelis, so they let them go. Turned out they were Mossad agents, and they admitted on Israeli TV that they'd been sent there to document the event of 9/11. So that tells you right there that the Israelis had prior knowledge, and we know the CIA had prior knowledge, and also Able Danger, Colonel Anthony Schaefer, I quote him in my article, they also had the Florida hijackers, including Muhammad Atta, under surveillance for a long time before 9/11. So you had Mossad that was surveilling them, and then you had the American military intelligence that was surveilling them. And they all, I think, knew each other were there. And it's just really bizarre.
Too many connections, Pat. Too many connections. That's going to take care of this week's program. Pat, thanks for coming on and being a guest again of Power of Prophecy.
It's great to be here, Jared.
All right. That's going to take care of this week's program. Pat and I want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.